Hello, and welcome to Selective Hearing, a space for honesty, healing, and transformation. I'm Julie DeMar, author, filmmaker, and host of this podcast. We've all practiced selective hearing. This podcast is about more than just a conversation. It's about breaking barriers, fostering understanding, and stepping into the best versions of ourselves. Take a deep breath, open your heart, and join me. What does selective hearing mean to you? Hello and good morning, everyone. Welcome back to another meaningful episode of Selective Hearing. I'm your host, Julie DeMar, and today I am honored to be joined by a special guest. I am here with therapist and minister and fierce advocate for healing, Stacey Mack. Today, Stacey is going to bring with her a wealth of wisdom. She is also a school social worker, professor, and founder of a virtual grief support group, which we are going to talk about today. She is the heartbeat behind the Coach Cam Transformational Foundation, which is a legacy initiative born from her deep personal loss and her powerful love for her son. So Stacey, thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So everybody, just to give you a little background, Stacey is my big sis. So, you know, I'm very excited because I'm the oldest in my family. So now I have a big sis and I am really, really loving that. What I do, Stacey, is I give every single guest the opportunity just to open up the show by sharing a little bit about yourself. So can you talk to the audience about your story?
Absolutely. So I thank you. And I'm glad to have a little sister that's so loving and kind. This was ordained by God. We met and then God has taken us on a journey. So I am Stacey Mack. I am the mother of two sons. But on last year, I faced a situation that no parent ever wants to face. My oldest son, Sean Levito Cameron Jr., was murdered a day after his birthday. And sorrow and grief is real. It's the first of everything. It's the first Mother's Day. It is his first birthday that he physically will not be present. It's his little brother's first birthday without him. It's his niece's first birthday. And so we have all these firsts that we're trying to process because Sean was big. He was my firstborn child as a teen mother. I had a baby boy that gave me an identity that I was going to save from the world. Nobody could mess with my baby boy, even when he was a real baby boy. But on May the 20th of 2024, his life was taken by gun violence. And so with that, I had a choice because the grief is real. He's gone. He won't come back in this life, but I do believe that to be absent from this body, he's present with Christ, and he always will hold a place in me. And so I wanted to take this grief and use it to help others in this grief process. Because when you isolate grief, it kills you while you're still trying to live. So I would say that's where I'm at right now, trying to create an atmosphere where we continue to live, we continue to grieve, but we embrace the grief and don't let the grief smother or embrace us, if that makes sense. And I mean that in the sense of grief can take you where it numbs you, take you into depression, all kind of mental illness, and it can become mental health if it's not addressed. But I believe when you acknowledge and you begin the process, you can use that grief to empower and help others. And that's my desire.
And that's extremely powerful. I want to get into you being a woman of many hats. And by many hats, I mean mom, grandma, counselor, friend, big sis. Yeah, you have a nonprofit. So in this season, how are all of these different roles that you embody shaping and helping you not only with the healing process, but with your initiative to help other people understand this?
Yeah, so I believe that the God we serve is so sovereign. There's a scripture I think of right now. It says that he knew my end before my beginning. And so everything in life prepares you to be an ambassador for God in the earthly realm. So as a school social worker, Sean was my first child. I know nothing about the school system. I grew up with my maternal grandmother who had limited education, and I was just a girl in school. You just go through school, you say, yes, ma'am, you do what you need to do. Where with Sean, he struggled. And he struggled because me being a teen mother, me being in an unhealthy relationship with his father, all those elements were there. And I remember when they began to use terms, emotionally impaired, learning disability. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because my grandmother taught me a boy is a boy. Let him run, let him play, keep going. And so I was faced with a barrier in my early 20s with my son. And I remember crying out to this God, God, if you take me through this, I'll go back and help others. Now that was just a cry because I was so desperate. And what do I do with my son? What does all these terms mean? And I have to say, many people embraced me and walked me through it. Then God allowed me to go back and get a degree in social work. So I got a degree in social work. I began to work in child welfare, and Sean was getting ready to go to high school. And they had a position as a school social worker. And I'm like, what's that about? But I also understood that would allow me to watch Sean in high school and be where Sean was. So I began my journey as a school social worker, and I loved the job. I would be off with him in the summers. I could kind of watch him, kind of. And he got a lot over on me, but you know, we made it through it all. From there, as a school social worker for over 20 plus years, I had a coworker. His name is Andre Talley. And him and I, you know, we would always work doing therapy. And I was like, this is pushing papers. This is not helping people. So in 2015, my life was upside down. Sean was incarcerated and his brother Micah was incarcerated. God gave me a directive. He said, start a practice. I'm like, for real? A practice? And I'm screaming at God because I'm in so much pain. And I went to this meeting and they kept saying, intentional, intentional. I said, that's it. Intentional counseling service. So 2015, I launched intentional counseling services. And the process of launching that, I began with another good friend. She's my mentor. She's my rock. Her name is Bonnie Holiday. And I was going through a struggle with my job as a school social worker. She said, won't you come and be an adjunct for us at a community college? The college is a Christian foundation college. I'm like, what is this? So I began to be an adjunct professor. And so I'm saying it in that scenario because every step, God was setting destiny for me. He was preparing me. And in these elements, I'm just the vessel, or I'm just the ambassador, his body that's being used in the earthly realm to let people know I don't have to wear a big cross. I don't have to go three Hail Mary. I don't have to do any of that. But my atmosphere is shifted because of the Holy Spirit that's in me, that I can go in and I can go to the root of things. I can discern things to help people have a better life where I had a struggle, right? This is a product today, but the struggle was real.
You said something that really stood out to me, and I'm going to bring it up because you said that when you were a school psychologist, you guys pushed a lot of paper. You're like, I need to actually help people. And I love that because I speak a lot on this show about how when I was in school, I got suspended and all kinds of things all the time, and no one ever said why. But it's like, you're supposed to be trained to understand behavior allegedly and all these things. And nobody ever was like, well, what's going on? What's the problem? They were just like, you know, see you in 2 weeks. So I love that you recognize that and you were like, okay, well, let's make some changes here that are really help people, because I think that is very important when we are doing this work, is like recognizing where there needs to be a restructure or something needs to be changed, and actually being brave enough to say, okay, and I'm gonna do it. I'm not gonna wait on you. I'm gonna make that change.
Absolutely. And I think the why come from life experiences. Because many times we're wounded healers. I wanted someone to ask me the why. Why is this little boy so aggressive? So I could tell them, we're living in a house with domestic violence. His father has a substance abuse. I have no identity of how to raise this up. But no one wanted to deal with the root. They only wanted to deal with the presenting issue, his behavior. And we know behaviors don't stand isolated. They don't stand alone. There's a root cause of any behavior. And all behavior is communicating something. And so, you know, the why to me was my pain. It was my pain. Nobody saw that how much pain I was in that had an impact on Sean. So yeah, that why is always there. I call it now that aha moment. Like, that's it. That's what it's about.
Yeah. So you said grief never goes away. This is something from our pre-show, everyone. Stacy said to me, grief never goes away. It just changes over time. So I would like to know right now, what is that relationship with grief look like for you?
Wow. That relationship with grief is painful right now. As I started out saying, it was the first. So Sean was extra. And so Mother's Day came, and the reality, like, I know Sean is deceased, but every day I'm trying to live without being able to physically touch him, communicate with him. And so on Mother's Day, his brother is doing everything he can, but his brother is not Sean. And so the tears came, and I even got a hug from you, and I had to leave because I was being overwhelmed. And I had to allow that grief to come out. I had to say, I miss you, boy. I never thought I would ever experience a pain like this. And the pain is I cannot physically have what I had for 37 years, my son, Sean. I just can't. And Sean was the first. He was my firstborn child. Again, he gave me an identity. He gave me a title, Mama. And it's just something about that first. Now, I love my son, Micah, right? But they're too different. They're different, right? I was looking at a picture and how Sean would just lay on me. Micah might give me a hug if I say, come here, let me give you a hug, right? But Sean was more of that emotional son that sometimes was good. Not always, but, you know, we had some journeys and we grew together. Micah came along 8 years later. I got a degree. I think I know a little something. I got a little experience. But with Sean, it was the first of everything because that's all I knew. And so the grief brought me back to, this is the first that you and him won't physically walk this journey together. He has completed his assignment. But you must carry this journey on for him and recognizing him and leaving a legacy of him as long as I possibly can.
That just made me think of something. So how are you at this point finding the balance with creating a legacy project for Sean, but also maintaining your identity as Stacy?
Yeah, so I go to therapy. I also am launching this once a month symposium and workshops that when things come up, because if you listen, there's always a theme. As these things come up, I will begin to process them with others. So I'm so excited that on Sunday will be the first, well, no, it'll be the second. I was part of a workshop, well, not a workshop. It was a violence, can't even think of the name of it right now, I'm sorry. But it was where other women who had lost their sons to violence. We talked about the violence in a way where many of them had never talked about it. And so on Sunday, May the 18th, for the anniversary of Sean, because May the 19th will be his birthday and May the 20th will be the day that he entered back in eternity. I'm going to propose that question of what are your thoughts through your grief journey? So I have a year thought. Some have three, some have four. And I believe as you continue to do the work, the grief don't take you out. You overtake the grief. The grief never goes away. You learn how to embrace the grief, right? So people will say, oh, time will heal all things. I don't agree with that. Time gives you the ability to learn how to adjust to all things like grief, because Sean will always be a part of me until I enter eternity. Sometimes I'm riding down the street and I'm like, dang, I need to. He's gone. I'm crying. And so I just employ that it is an essence for you to acknowledge that that individual, Sean, was in my life and now he's not. I also talk about him regularly. I think I'm becoming more cognitive to talk about him in the past tense than the present. But sometimes they integrate with each other. I'm just thinking on this conversation, I'm talking to you and I'm like, yeah, when Sean, but it's really when Sean was. So learning to navigate all that, it's a day by day. Sometimes it is hours, sometimes it's minutes, and sometimes it's seconds. But I think the cognitive awareness that I love him, I miss him, but I honor the time I have with him. And honoring it, I think I also acknowledge my feelings with it. I don't want to be on your show and pretend like anger don't come. The young man who killed him, I just choose to forgive him, but I am very clear I'm angry that you made that choice. And so I separate the two very clearly.
Recently, I've shared with you, I've been speaking with mothers who have lost their children. And that is one thing that comes up is the anger. And it's a real response to what's happening right now. And I appreciate the honesty in that because I'm sure that there are a lot of mothers who aren't getting the opportunity to talk about it, especially on platforms such as this, and say, I'm angry. And being able to hear that from somebody else and being like, okay, it's okay to feel this way then, you know, it's a normal response to what is going on with me. I think that's very important. So I want to speak more about the panel for grieving mothers, and it's coming up on Sunday. So it's a opportunity for mothers to speak openly about grief. What do you wish more people understood about showing up for someone who's grieving?
Okay, so when you first lose someone, it's everybody there. Because everybody emotions is like, oh my God, Stacy, Micah, Mimi, oh my God, Sean, right? And they're trying to process. But then there comes 30 days. Less people around, less calls. Then it becomes 90 days. You're just there like, wow. I can't talk to Sean. I can't see him. And you're trying to navigate the whole family still, because there's still Sean, there's still Micah, there's still Mimi. And just like there, I'll call a Micah Sean, you know, because you're still in the now of the three of us. Then there comes that anniversary. And people, I don't think intentionally they forget about you, but they just go on with their life because they don't have that deficit you have. And I just think there needs to be more during that year time of support and communication and groups and different things because there's a roller coaster of emotions and feelings that's going on. I sometimes will just scroll my phone or the text. Where we would be texting back and forth. And I remember the last project, he had remodeled my house and put floors in. And he sent me a text and I could hear his voice. So I'll play that just to try to get that sensation of not having him. But also, I think, you know, I'm single. So I don't have that companion physically to go and cry on his shoulder, right? And even with my personality, I don't know if I would just cry on somebody's shoulder. Like, you're my little sister. You seen Sunday, I just laid against you because I'm like, this is my little sister. She got me. That's another show about my issues and boundaries, but you
Yeah.
know, learning how to allow people in that part. But I think it has to be a safe space where when you're with others who can relate, There's a look, there's a feeling that you get when someone who has lost a child, you really can relate to them. You're like, yeah, I get that. I get that void. So I think in answering your question in a summary, it's having outlets. Therapy is cool. You know, you cry, you talk to your therapist, but you know, your therapist may not have actually experienced what you've been through. They can have empathy, but when you have a community of others who are determined to heal and walk this grief journey and not let this grief journey kill them physically, emotionally, because if you don't deal with all the emotions with it impacts your body. It impacts your other children. It impacts your family. Families are destroyed over situations like this because they don't have an outlet where everybody can be heard, everybody can be embraced, and everybody can process. And you know, we're talking about gun violence, but I believe grief has very different elements. It could be a death of a child, it could be a death of a husband or a wife, a spouse. It could just be a death of a good friend or someone. It has a lot of elements. And I just think the common denominator in it is there's a loss of something or someone that nothing can fill that place.
Can I go off script for a second? Because when you're talking about you laid your head on my shoulder and that's a, you working through boundaries, it made me think about the first time you offered me your shoulder and you said something to me that broke me. You were like, you gotta let people help you, or like, I can't remember the exact word, but you said that. And I was like, oh my God, because I was so hyper independent. That's like something that I battle with. And you said that and it broke me. And I think I text you after and was like, thanks for being a safe space. Because it's important. It's really important to be able to trust someone in that way and feel safe enough to be vulnerable.
Yes.
So.
I mean, I don't think you're off script. I think you're right on script. Like with grief, you know, it's not a pity party, but it's just sometimes I just don't have it. I'm not able, right? Because it paralyzes you because you're just like, oh my God, I got to carry on, but I don't want to. I don't want to, but you know you have to. And I think, you know, my cousin, she always tell me, feel it, but now you got to move, right? And it don't mean I got to move in 5 minutes. It may be an hour. It may be a whole day, right? But you have to feel it, process it, you know, and you have to be able to allow yourself to say, I'm hurting. I hurt, right? And you know, people, I think another thing, important part, people say you're strong. I'm not strong. I don't have a choice. I'm very vulnerable. I'm very broken right now, right? But I still got to pay every one of these bills I created over here. I still have to carry out God's assignment, right? And God modeled that for you and I with his son Jesus. He gave his very best for you and I. His mother was at the grave grieving for him. But you don't see anywhere biblically where they just gave up. They mourn, they grieved, right? And so I can't tell you of a God I love that's sovereign and everything to me, but then I dismiss him when my first son is murdered. It can't be the only good. It has to be when there's sorrow or pain, he's still that good God. And destiny still lies with him. You know, I had, this might be off script, but I had a conversation with him. I'm like, I know you were able to call a host of angels in. You could have stopped all of this because you're God. But if you will let me know the mystery of this death, it will help me. If you just will do that for me, daddy, father, friend. And when we went to court, they began to talk, and Sean and the young man were arguing. Sean left. He said that was my spirit that was in him pulled him away. But then he returned back. So he overrode the Holy Spirit. Then him and Lydell, the young man, and Sean made choices. We know in the enemy territory, there's nothing. He comes to rob, kill, steal, and destroy. That let me know that that sovereign God loved me, that he would let me see, give me that mystery to discern that. But it also showed me that we have choices. And when we override them, there's consequence. And that's a whole nother level of understanding the mysteries of God and how sovereign He
You did share that with me.
is.
You did at church. You told me. You said you asked God to show you why, and your words were, He showed you that they both had a choice. So I want to talk about Coach Cam Foundation, and I want to talk about Coach Cam and the impact that he had on the community and how you are going to keep this going.
Absolutely. So again, I talked about I was a teen mother, and Sean took his journey. He made some bad decisions. He entered the Michigan Department of Correction, but Sean was a natural born athlete. The football field was like he would just lose himself in an element. And he always loved and cared, but he made some poor decisions in life. And so the last 3 years of his life, maybe it was longer than that, he had begun to change his life around. He gave his life to the Lord. He was a coach for a little league team here where we live. And he began to use all his trauma and all his trials and tribulations, where someone else would have wrote him off, they would have gave up on him. He used that to help motivate other youth. So you would find him encouraging young men who were traveling the path he had made it through. I believe even the conversation with the guy he murdered, he was saying to him, like, man, you don't have to get down like that. And I believe it escalated. But he always was trying to show, you don't have to travel this road because I could tell you it. I've been there. So the foundation will target young men who are troubled. It will target grief, and it will provide financial for those that are in transition that may just need a little help along the way. So it'll have scholarships, it will have a grief total education component around grief and young men who are in need. So those will be three key elements of this foundation that will stand. Those will be the pillars that it will stand on.
I love that. I really do. I want to highlight something there within the pillars, and it's the grief counseling that's in there, because a community is grieving over him too. Young
Absolutely.
boys who looked up to him, who may not have had father figures, are looked up to him and received love and guidance and care for him. So I think that's important, because sometimes I don't think that we think about the impact, the ripple effect of these things, how it runs out into the community. So I think that's really beautiful. I love that.
And the team that he coached, they were coming back in, and a lot of them had heard about it, and a lot of them was at his home going service. But it was this one young man that Sean was working with, and when Sean called him, he hung up on Sean. And Sean was like, Mom, he really hung up on me. I was like, okay. And he was so devastated, and he was like, I'm quitting. And so I got to meet him, and I said, hey, I heard you were the young man that hung up on Coach Cam. That tells me you got some coach there. And he kind of, he was really nervous. And I said, listen, quitting is not an option. We got to go to this football field and we have to represent Coach Cam. And I have to tell you, he finished the season just outstanding. And we gave him a Coach Cam Transformation Award because he carried out. And I use that as an example because I remember many days Sean just thought it was okay to quit. That's not an option. We may fall down, but we're going to get back up, right? We'll have some scars and we're going to get delayed. But Sean grew up on another scripture. It says, I can do all things through Christ that strengthen thee. Right? And we would say that day in and day out. And some days it was like, we can do all things because we weren't doing all things. But I have to tell you, the word will manifest itself if you keep believing the word and carrying it out. And so that's the objective, is that yes, Coach Cam has transitioned from this life. But if he has impacted you, let's take some of the things he put in you and let's take them to a new level. Let's level up on it now. Let's don't use Coach Cam death as a way for us to revert back to what's not. Right. And so, it's always how can we see God in it? How can we trust the process in it? And how do we continue to carry out the destiny and the assignment that God has given to us? But even in that, to be able to say, we on this Sunday, it may be some tears. It may be moments like, wait a minute, this hurts. So I believe staying in the now and being true and real is an essence to everything. Because we're taught, like, just get over it, keep going. No, ma'am. No, we're hurting, we're in pain. And what I do know about grief, even when you try to hide it, it shows up. Your attitude, somebody can pass you up, you want to kill them. It has no correlation because you're in pain. And just think of physical pain. Whenever you go to an urgent care or a doctor with pain, they say, what level is the pain? Because they want to know how intense that pain is, because that impacts your cognitive ability to carry out stuff. And so I think with grief, we have to be able to say, what level is your grief today, this hour? And when you do that, you're able to say, Sunday, my pain was 10 plus, but it was something about your touch that said you can release it. And if we had been in an atmosphere, I probably would have cried right there. But I knew we were trying to move service, so I needed to get in my car and just right. But you allowed a safe place to say that pain is hurting now. I can't do anything but go there with it. And that's what I did. I was like, boy, you shouldn't be here giving me my flower or telling me, Mom, I just had this made for you. Because, like I said, he was so extra. Never knew what Mother's Day would bring. Friends, and this is how, I believe God used things. One of his friends sent me a dozen of tulips. And I can imagine, I told her, thank you, but I can imagine. She got something from him in the spirit where I'm like, you got to get my mom something for Mother's Day, right? And that was just unbelievable. And some of his friends, I got texts from them that just show like he's living on. He's living on in individuals. We just don't have him physically.
Is it okay for me to share that I didn't know? I knew that you lost your son, but I didn't know who your son was.
Yes,
Okay.
absolutely.
When you revealed to me who it was, when you sent me everything about, what we were going to talk about on the show today and all that, I was like, oh my goodness. And then I started texting with my sister. Even my sister felt compelled to like write me a message for me to read to you. And I did. Because she even, and she was talking about when they went on a Black college tour and all that stuff and how he was big bro to her. And like, oh, that's wild that his mom is now your big sis. Because he was big bro to me and he was on a field trip hollering at all my friends. And like, yeah, like, and she was like, but protected all of them and her the whole time. And like, I was like, that's crazy. And I just told her the other day too that now every time I look at you, I can't not see him. When before I did, I was like, he has his mama's whole face. How did I not see that?
Yeah, but
But yeah.
that's the thing, twin, right?
Like that. And I was like, I don't understand all this time. Is it, but I guess it was, when God wanted that even to be revealed to me. 'Cause then when I saw you, I was like, now I can never not look at you and not see him in your whole face. Like,
Yeah.
but yeah, like, oh my goodness. So yeah. Okay. So I do want to talk about some tools. 'Cause that is one thing that I do for the listeners every single episode is we discuss tools, like really simple practical tools that someone who is relating to this, you can offer them. So what are some tools that you use maybe personally or professionally to help you process when your emotions start to
One of the tools is to embrace. Stop and embrace. Because, like, we can override our emotions for a moment, but then they'll come back up. So, I love to walk. So, when I last week, this whole month, I've been getting outside, I will just walk. And I will walk, and it's nature, God, and I. I even walk over to the church where where his homegoing was. I walk around the parking lot, and I believe whatever element you want to use, you have to embrace that. Because once I walk, I begin to take deep breaths and I can find some peace in the pain. I also believe that you do need a good therapist. You need someone because family and friends can't handle it. They're trying to walk through their own grief. And listen, I am very clear that all therapists are not good. I'm not saying you need to go get medication. Now, I want to be very transparent that I had to at some point get some medication just to help me be able to function. I'm not on it anymore. I just needed something because it was too much for me. I was like paralyzed. I could not function because my job requires me to think. It requires me to be in the now, and I couldn't. But with therapy, with me doing exercise, and again, let me say this. I serve a big God, and I'm not on here to tell anybody who to serve. But without God, I couldn't. I wouldn't even want to. So you need to be solid. My faith is solid. The church that I'm at now was what I needed. I got there like in October, somewhere in there. He got murdered in May. But I needed a solid place, physical. I couldn't Zoom no more. I needed to be in a physical place every week, right? And so I want to summarize this. I think you need your faith. I think you need therapy. And I think you need some outlets to get it out. And if that's walking, if it's working out, if it's swimming, but you have to acknowledge it. It's kind of like hitting your baby toe. You have some real words. But that pain don't even stop then. You have to stop, look at that toe and be like, hey, you cool dude. Come on now. Come on now. That's too much pain. I believe that's how grief is. You have to stop, acknowledge it, and determine what do you want to do with it. As I was preparing for your show and as I was preparing for Sunday, I was like YouTubing like different things because I wanted, like I'm like, who's out here phenomenal that I could use? And I have to tell you, it's a struggle out there in regards to people acknowledging grief in a way where you're embracing the reality of it and you're not using theory. Theory is good, don't get me wrong. The nine elements of grief is real, denial, anger, all that. But to make it practical, you have to understand that they are all interchangeable. They do not stand in an island alone on that list. You could be in denial, you could be angry, all at the same time and don't even know it. You stop, acknowledge it, and determine how you want to move with it. And that's a piece too. You determine. One of the young ladies that's going to be on the panel. It's been a while since her son was murdered, and last month was the first time she ever publicly talked about it. And I remember when we were preparing for it, she was in a bad place. I said, "Where are you at?" And I was like, "I'm about to pull up on you right now." And all I wanted to do was hug her. I wanted to share my love and my energy and that void I had with her. And I mean, she done phenomenal on speaking with it, and she's a part of the panel on Sunday, again, where I want her to speak because I believe the more you get it out and the more you talk about it, the more your territory is enlarged to walk the grief process.
And the more we talk about it, the more we can normalize this. There's so many stigmas attached to certain things, and talking about it is the only way to break that. So,
Absolutely.
we're going to speak about your definition of selective hearing. So, everyone, Stacy described selective hearing as a conscious and unconscious power over how and when we process. So I would like to know how this concept helps you or is helping you navigate grief right now.
Because it's allowing me to enter into arenas that I wouldn't without you. Because there's an audience that's been waiting for you to bring this forth. And because you gave me this opportunity, now we get to impact others who have been isolated, who didn't understand it, where they get to have their aha moment, like, for real? She's on here talking about this with a smile, and she's able to make jokes because everybody sometime needs someone to loan their ego to them so that they can begin to process their journey. So because you've created this platform that millions will hear, I believe this is another way that God is using you as an ambassador, that we could carry out the good news even in pain.
Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for trusting me to share your story. So let everybody know how they can participate in the panel on Sunday, or view the panel and participate in the discussion.
Absolutely. So I will provide you with a Zoom link at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You will come on that platform and we will have an awesome time celebrating the anniversary of the late Sean Levito Cameron, the Coach Cameron Foundation. We just welcome you. We want to embrace our grief with your grief, and we will continue this journey to see where God can get the glory out of something that makes no sense to anyone who loses a child or a loved one. But to know that there is a message in our pain if we can just continue to tell the story.
Amen to that. And everyone, so listen to me right now, because we'll have that Zoom link at selectivehearingshow.com. It will also be on all Selective Hearing Show social media. It will be on my personal social media. So it'll be on Julie DeMar Facebook and LinkedIn. And it's also in the show details of this episode right now. So hit that drop down tab and please be there on Sunday at 7 p.m. So, Stacey, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you. Thank you. And we look forward to seeing you guys on Sunday.
And everyone, we will see you on Sunday. And until next time, this is Selective Hearing.